For this morning is actually a bit of a repeat from what we did on Good Friday, and it's Isaiah chapter 53, not the whole chapter this time, but certainly beginning from verse 1. Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain, like one from whom people hide their faces. He was despised and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering, yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions, he was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. We are in the middle of a series, Building Long-Term Relationships. And we started it back in the beginning of April, and we started it actually recognising the fact that our society is constructed and around short-term relationships. And it's all about the next thing or the next hit or the next person or whatever else. And in many ways, it's structured to mitigate against long-term relationships with the way the whole financial structure and the way cities sometimes operate and the way families aren't connected together as much as they used to be. And so we swim in a pool that sort of unintentionally maybe, but has the effect of promoting short-term relationships. And we saw that the idea of long-term relationships actually is grounded in the reality of the Trinity. It's grounded in God, who's been in the Father, Son and the Holy Spirit, who've been in long-term, eternal, perfect, loving relationship. And it's out of that basis that we can then seek to build and establish long-term relationships ourselves. Because there's things that you can get from long-term relationships that you just can't get from short-term ones. It's a bit like with wine. There's things you can buy a bottle, a crush of grapes and ferment it and drink it today, but you won't get the same things that you get unless you cellar it for 10, 15 years in a climate-controlled environment, all those sorts of things. And so part of us building long-term relationships is to say, well, yes, as a person who's connected to God, I want to be committed to long-term relationships and I actually have a vision for it. But we also saw, we need to have confidence that's possible. B, we need to have a vision for it. But C, we then also need to persevere through it. Because long-term relationships require perseverance. In the second week, Paul looked at Ephesians chapter 4, and he came up with lots of F words, best friend forever words, and I'm going to ask Eddie to see if he can find those summary slides there. And these were the F words these are like some practical tips for building and sustaining long-term relationships. You need to have faith, you need to have filters, you need to have forbearance, forgiveness, and you need to have food, and you need to be finding stuff. But there are also some dangerous or some fatal F words as well. And I'll see if we can pull up that slide for us too. That's a bit further down, Eddie. That would be great if you can. There we go. Falsehood, fury and frivolous fighting and fears. So you can go back and listen to the recording if you can't remember all of those F words. But some great individual tips that he sort of touched base on for a lot of things. And then we got to Good Friday. So we can go back to the other slides now. Thanks, Ed. Back to the first one. Yeah, thanks. And we saw that at Good Friday, Jesus was under incredible pressure. Whether it was with disciples who denied him and rejected him and betrayed him. Whether it's people falsely accusing him. Whether it's people fleeing away from him. Whether it's people abusing him. People mocking him. And obviously also physically harming and crucifying him and ultimately killing him. But we saw that at every turn, that out of Jesus flowed love in response. And when we think about that, we think about long-term relationships. There are times when those relationships are going to come under extreme pressure. And even if it's not extreme pressure, just sometimes pressure, we can be a bit shocked or disheartened by what actually flows out of us when we are under pressure. And so we need to seek for God's presence in our lives so that when we are under pressure, that the love of God flows out of us rather than a lot of other destructive things. On Easter Sunday, we obviously celebrated the resurrection. And what that does is that frames our relationships in a much longer time frame. It's not just like this life, but it's this life and the next life together. And that means that we approach death and the loss of loved ones differently than if it wasn't the case. But secondly, it also frames things for us in the way that if you're at school and all you can think about is our life exists up to grade 12 and you have no vision of life beyond grade 12. But our lives are actually like that. We'll live longer in eternity than we will here. And so this life, this stage of our life, is actually only a part of it. And so it helps us to have a longer term frame for things. The resurrection, just like it did for the first disciples, it brings peace and joy and purpose as well. And those are things that you and I will need if we're going to establish and build and maintain long-term relationships. Last weekend at our weekend away, we used a couple of different tools to help us know ourselves better. One was the five love languages and the other one was the Enneagram. And I'm not going to go into great details about those here, but they're not the only things. But if we can find ways or tools or whatever else to help us understand how we are wired and maybe how we've grown up and been shaped and nurtured and even have some of our own brokenness understood a bit better. And we can understand that everybody else is actually different to us. And so that can help us sustain long-term relationships when we are more aware of ourselves and more aware of each other. Because the sort of going in assumption we have is that the people are just going to look at situations or relationships just like us, but they don't. And so a key to getting better at sustaining long-term relationships is growing an awareness of those things. But today I want to talk about something that is very close to people's hearts. And when I talk about this topic, you may try and think about the earliest time you can remember that. But it might be that the earliest time you remember this topic is when, if you're in the playground in primary school and they were picking teams, and you were left to be the last person picked, or maybe no one really wanted you on their team. And it's got to the point where, okay, David, just come and join us. But you didn't know, you really knew that they didn't really want you to join them. Or maybe the person who was your best friend today, tomorrow you get to school and find out they're actually now your worst enemy. Or maybe you apply to try and get into some sort of course or training institution and they reject you. You fail to get in. You see, that's the thing. If we're going to have success at long-term relationships, we're going to have to deal with and wrestle with the issue of rejection. It's just unavoidable. Thanks, Eddie. To build long-term relationships, we need to deal with the wounds and the weapons of the rejection shop. And me just raising this topic will, for some of you, have made immediately in the forefront of your mind a historic or maybe an even current experience of rejection that you find really painful. It might have even happened 20 years ago, but when you think about it, it actually stirs up even painful emotions, even right at this moment. You see, because rejection is something that cuts to the core of who we are. When we get rejected, we can experience it in lots of different ways. Some of us, and depending on the nature and the circumstances for the resurrection, rejection, what we can find is that it attacks us and we become fearful. I'm rejected, so I'm not going to have security. I'm not going to have friends. I'm not going to have a partner. I'm not going to have provision. I'm not going to have whatever else. And the rejection taps into us in a deep way and it grows a sense of fear within us. For others of us, when we get rejected, maybe we've worked hard at something, or we've done an assignment, or we've done a project, or we've done some work for someone else and they've rejected it and they've disparaged it, or we haven't met their standards, and what it does is it speaks and it sort of pokes the part of us where we feel guilty. And it can load a deep, a heavy load of guilt on us. But some other times when we experience rejection from other people, what we actually experience it as is a shame. I'm rejected because I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy. And so rejection is a terrible thing because it can touch such deep parts of you and me. It can touch us and it can cause our fear to become overwhelming. It can put on us a great load of guilt. And it can also burden us with a sense of shame. Now, all of us will experience rejections of some sort or other, and sometimes the minor ones, sort of just like water off the duck's back, aren't they? And particularly if they're rejecting from someone you don't really like anyway, then it doesn't necessarily cut so deep. But when the rejection is someone that you're close to, or someone that you admire, or someone that you've invested a lot of time in, then the rejection in proportion is bigger, isn't it? Now, if you experience rejection by a parent, or a child, or a spouse, or a long-term friend, it can just cut much deeper, can't it? And it can paralyze us. And we hate it. Of all the things we could choose to have in this life, rejection is not one of them. And I reckon there's two main ways that we try and then protect ourselves from the hurt of rejection. And the first one is the turtle defense. You know, we put on a hard outer shell and we withdraw into it. And we don't let anybody get close. The trouble with that is, what happens with that strategy is it tends to then become a pattern of behaviour in our lives for every relationship. We do this withdrawal to protect me from that person or that sort of rejection, but what we find is that then isolates us from a bunch of other people who actually want to love us. And the second, some of us aren't turtles, others of us are porcupines. We become really prickly. We don't necessarily withdraw, but we become really, really prickly and people get poked when they come near us, right? Again, it's a defense mechanism. And some of us, at some stages in our lives, even begin to ponder, maybe God has rejected me. Maybe this supposed loving God of the universe has rejected me. And that's why we started reading Isaiah 53 today. We saw on Good Friday that the early church and the church down through history have clearly seen that this passage has its ultimate fulfillment in Jesus. And what we see here is something remarkable. In verse 3, "He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain." And so my first response to the idea that we might be rejected by God is that that's not just a theoretical thing for God. God has experienced rejection like you and I experience rejection. Not as some sort of almighty, all-powerful, all-seeing, all-knowing, up there spiritual super being, but as a person who is genuinely human. Just like the Son of God, for sure, not denying Jesus' divinity, but his genuine humanity. And the book of Hebrews picks this up as well. That he's acquainted with our temptations and the sufferings of this life and the rejections of this life. Jesus was betrayed by those closest to him, those he had invested the most in, those he should have been able to rely on. And so you and I can know that God knows what rejection is like. Those of you who have been following our daily reading plan, we're getting towards the end of the book of Job. And maybe preeminently in the Old Testament, Job is a person who wrestled with the apparent rejection of God. To him it seemed like he was unjustly judged and abandoned by God when he had been faithful to God in all of his life. Well, not denying his own shortcomings and failings, but to him it was perceived that God had rejected him. Now, when we read the beginning chapters and the end chapters of Job, we actually see that there's a bigger picture, and that God hadn't, in fact, rejected Job. In fact, God was holding Job up as an example of someone who was faithful to him. But Job never got to understand that. He never got to see the big picture. And from his perspective, he experienced what he went through as the apparent rejection of God. But being fortunate for us living on the other side of Easter, the other side of the incarnation, the death and the resurrection and ascension of Jesus, we know that that's not the case. Whenever we can begin to interpret our experiences as a rejection of God, we can hold on to the fact that no, whatever else it is, it's not us being rejected by God. You read through the Psalms and they often express, oh, God's rejected us. And the Israelites, when they went into exile, often thought that, but God hadn't actually rejected them. God was working on some things that needed to be worked on. And he ended up bringing them back and fulfilling his promises and all those sorts of things. And so temporary or apparent rejection is not permanent rejection. And just because you and I may not get a particular prayer answered, or we might be going through a particular form of suffering, or even some long-standing difficulty, which we might tend to interpret as a rejection by God, the depth of God's love for us revealed in the life, death and resurrection of Jesus can help us understand that that might not actually be the case. We might not understand everything that's going on. We might not understand why our sick child that we've prayed earnestly for hasn't been healed. But we can hold that in a bigger picture of God becoming one of us, entering into our rejection, dying for us with the hope of resurrection life. In John chapter 6, verse 37, it says this. All those the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me, I will never drive away. And so if we are thinking that what I'm going through is the rejection of God, no, it isn't. God understands, God's experienced the rejection that you've experienced, and God is utterly committed to his people. He will not drive us away. But there are times when God appears absent. And down through history, some even the people who have been sort of experts at following God and have been close to God and hear God and see great answers to prayer and are full of the fruit of the Spirit go through these periods that are sometimes in church history called the dark night of the soul. And these are distressing periods of time where people lose all sense of God's presence with them. Their prayers don't get answered. It seems like nothing's going on. The way that they used to sense God's presence and peace in their lives is just totally taken away from them. And part of their testimony of people down through their history is that those dark nights of the soul don't go on forever. And one of the things that sometimes God does in that is that what he does is he helps people love God for who God, grow to the point where they love God for who God is, not for just for the sensation of God's presence. And so sometimes those periods, as difficult as they might seem, are actually God's best for us, because he wants us to actually get beyond a particular addiction to the sensation about the presence of God, for example. So God is an expert at nurturing and forming our souls, and sometimes that means we can experience a lack. It's just like if you're a parent, right? Sometimes you say, okay, for the next period of time, beloved child of mine, you're not allowed to watch the TV. And the child goes back, oh, Mummy, you hate me. You're the worst person in the whole world. They interpret it as a rejection. And sometimes, if we are not our best selves as parents, sometimes we are actually rejecting that little brat and I just want you to go away for a little while. But in our best selves, we're saying, actually, I do love you dearly, and it's for your good that this period of whatever it is goes on. So God not only understands our rejection, he's got our best interests in heart. And one of the things that I love, again it's in from Isaiah 61 is this, and also in Psalm 48, and we'll just go to those two places. Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted. That's what happens when we get rejected deeply, right? We experience a brokenheartedness. And sometimes what that does is it makes it harder for us to love or draw close to other people or even to God, right? Because we're protecting ourselves from future harm. And it feels like sometimes even that God might pour, or people might pour their love into our lives, but because we've got broken hearts, the love just runs out the other side and we never feel loved. But here we've got this revelation that amongst everything else that God does, is that God heals the brokenhearted. And it says the same thing in Psalm 147 from verse 2. The Lord builds up Jerusalem. He gathers the exiles of Israel. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. But if we've taken the turtle defence or the porcupine defence, what that can sometimes do is also unintentionally cut us off from God. We're rejecting people, keeping them at arm's length so they don't hurt us anymore, and what that also has the unintended consequence of sometimes holding God at arm's length. And so in the light of a fresh recognition of the love and tenderness of God, the healing broken-hearted purposes of God, we need to take a risk and poke our head out of our shell. Let our porcupine quills come down a bit and say, God, I give you my heart. I need you to heal its brokenness. George Michael had insight into this. Last Christmas, I gave you my heart. The very next day, you gave it away. I can't remember the rest of the lines. I did look them up earlier. This time, I'm saving it for someone special. I think that's how it goes, right? And that's actually deeply what we need to do. We need to give our hearts to God and let him heal them and let him take away the pain of rejection and envelop us in his love. So that we are, it's a bit like that we have this magnetic field of love that guards us against future hurt from rejection. You know, like our Earth relies on a magnetic field to keep dangerous particles from hitting the ground and like radiating us and, you know, shooting holes in our genomes. but there's this magnetic field that doesn't cut us off from the universe, but it protects us from the damaging rays that are from the universe. And as we give our hearts to God and ask God to fill us with His love, it's like we're enveloped in the magnetic field of God's love. Not that we're isolated from people with hard shells or porcupine quills that keep people at arm's length, but that as rejecting things happen to us, the magnetic field of God acts like a buffer, and the internal resource of God's love streaming out from us acts like a cushion. And although sometimes we might experience deep rejection, it's not incapacitating or debilitating or a forever experience. That's why in Ephesians chapter 3, Paul was praying this. It's not the only reason, but I think one of them. Ephesians chapter 3. I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all God's holy people to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love. Not intellectually, but experientially, relationally know the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge. That goes beyond us being able to figure it all out. That goes beyond us having all of the answers to the why questions or why God questions. That you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. You see, when we save our hearts for someone special, when we save our hearts for God, we experience the eternity of God's love. We can experience the eternity of God's love. And that gives you and I a great place to deal with rejection in a way that enables us to build and sustain long-term relationships. And so in a little few moments' time, there's going to be a chance for you to just come before God and say, God, I've been wounded by this rejection. I've retreated into my shell, I've raised my quills, I've blocked myself off from people and maybe even from you, but I recognise now that you know what rejection feels like and that you've acted to assure us that you actually don't reject me. And I want to take a risk and give you my heart, my broken heart, and ask you to heal it. Pour your love into my heart and bind it up so that when I receive love, it doesn't just drain out, but that it's held there and that I live in the magnetic protecting field of your love. So that's the first step, dealing with the wounds of the rejection shop. The second step, you'll be glad to know, I won't be speaking about that for anywhere near the same length of time. And that's the weapons of the rejection shop. Basically, just don't use rejection as a weapon. Don't reject people with the maybe unarticulated intent of sticking a knife into them. Don't use rejection as a pin into a voodoo doll, even if you don't actually have a physical one. When we again recognise how deep rejection can cut us, let's just say, determine in our own hearts, I am not going to use rejection as a weapon. Now, when we're at the end of our tethers and when the people are driving us crazy and we just need to get a result, there's a great temptation to use rejection as a weapon because it's so painful. And you can get a response, even though you can get an immediate response often, even though it may not be a healthy or appropriate response. And so sometimes when we find ourselves doing that, we just need to say, God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I used that weapon. I shouldn't have done that. I wasn't full of your resources. I was in a stress state. Please forgive me, God. Fill me with your love so that even when I have to do difficult things like say, no, you can't borrow my car, or no, you can't go and visit your friend, or no, I won't be able to see you for a while, you're doing it from a place of love and for the best interests of people. And not with an intention of trying to poke their fear, shame or guilt. And if you and I have grown up in environments where use of rejection has been a habit, it might actually take us a while to form new habits. And that's okay. As long as we say, God, I want to wean myself off the addiction to rejection and find your ways of interacting with people that are safe and appropriate and helpful, even when other people are acting inappropriately. See, I'm not saying we shouldn't avoid people or remove ourselves from difficult situations. I'm not saying that at all. Sometimes that's the loving and wise thing to do for us and other people. But we can do that without the intent of putting the knife into them and twisting their fear, shame or guilt. By the grace of God, sometimes it's very hard not to. I'm not denying that at all. But when we reflect on how much we hate rejection, let's be people who less and less use rejection. Because in the light of the love of God in Christ Jesus and the work of the Spirit, thanks Eddie, we can be healed, restored. There's another subtle reference there. Restored. I'll just give you a few moments to see that really bad one. Healed, restored, and renewed. And leave the wounds and weapons of the rejection shop behind. So I'm going to invite Chris up to start playing quietly on the keyboard, and just a time now for you to actually a bit of ministry time between you and God. And if me raising the topic today of rejection has brought acutely into sharp focus for you that you're brokenhearted because of rejection in your past or even that you're currently experiencing, and that you've withdrawn into your turtle shell or put up your porcupine quills, now will be an opportunity to say, God, I gave this person my heart and they damaged it, but now I'm giving my heart to you because I know you won't. I'm going to take a risk, God. Ask you to heal my broken heart and bind up its wounds. Pour your love into me to heal me. Put a magnetic protecting field of your love around me so that I can actually connect with people and still be safe. You might like to pray something like this quietly in your heart. You don't have to pray it out loud. I'm just going to pray some words that talk about what I've just talked about. And you might like to make them your own in your heart. God, you know I have experienced rejection from others. And sometimes it's felt like even you have rejected me. But Lord, I know that you have experienced rejection. That you've borne our suffering and our pain, and that you gave your life out of love for me. And so, Lord, I lay aside my defense mechanisms of withdrawal or prickliness, just for a moment, God, to let you in. Sorry for isolating myself from your life. Please forgive me for that. And now I humbly ask that you would heal my broken heart. Repair every wound. Pour your love into my heart in a fresh way, God. And make me new. before I had a picture of someone with tears pouring down. And then God had tears pouring down too. But those tears turned into a cleansing and restoring stream. So if that's for you this morning, I pray that you would experience God's tears as a cleansing and healing and restoring stream in the deepest part of your life. We're going to sing Glorious Ruins, which is a song about God taking our brokenness and bringing it back to life. Things rising up from the ashes. And so I pray that you would use this song as a prayer, and that even in this song too, that you would experience God's healing presence. And if you want some further personal prayer to chat with me or after the service, I'm more than happy, just come quietly down the front. And I'll be more than happy to pray with you in a more detailed and personal way. But let's stand together and sing these words.